Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill is not here. Dave Pullen's in here for O-Dog. That was smooth.
Playing the role of O-Dog today.
That's the first
That's
time.
Just habit. That's just habit, though.
Simply habit.
Surprised it doesn't happen more.
I'm shocked, honestly, it doesn't happen all the time. Because when I'm leading into an hour, a lot of times I'm not even paying attention. It's just I'm just spitting out, you know, we're in, this is the hour, this is where you can hear us, this is who we are. All right, let's get going. Yeah. And I haven't made that mistake all week. Meanwhile,
there a kitchen visit involved right there or not?
Actually, you know what was involved? The putting green showed up just before the show. My little putting
mat. Oh, no. So did you sank a 15-footer? Is that what you did before you came back?
Exactly. Wow. Shout out to Bezos. I always believed in you, Bezos. I always knew you were the guy for me.
So it showed up today or last night when it was supposed to be there last night?
It literally showed up at 3:55. Like I was, I had logged in, I had connected to the radio, and then I heard the doorbell ring, and I knew it was like calling my name. So in between the first break, I opened the thing up. The second break, I went up and got the putter, and now I've just been putting. So working on my short game over here.
Might have to give us a demonstration at some point. Like I know you're going on. Are you going on holidays? What is it? Next week?
Next week, yeah.
Yeah, you'll be really good by the time you come back.
It's real green. It's basically like putting at Augusta National.
Exactly.
You know,
just leave the Augusta word out of there, buddy. You just got to worry about one of those two words. You don't have
national.
To worry about
the
Augusta.
National. That's right.
Just the National.
Actually, I got support at the National. I was at Golf Town again a couple of days ago, and there was instead of the last time I was there, when someone was like, "You got no shot," one guy was like, "Good luck. I think you're going to do it." Like, thank you.
Well,
very
buddy,
much.
I'll tell you, you're becoming sort of a national hero. Let's use the word national. You're becoming sort of a golfing hero because I'm getting asked about it all the time. Yeah. And I'm getting asked about it at my golf course. And I will tell you, Brian, you now have an open invitation when visitors are allowed to come to my golf course.
Wow.
Wow.
From the golf course itself.
I
kind
can't
of a little
wait.
Warm up.
Thank you
kind
very
of a little
much.
Warm up. You are, and that didn't come from me, by the way. It did come from me. You can come with me, too. But that came from the golf course. That came
Shout out. Love it.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
Shout out to Weston Golf Course for inviting you over.
All-time great track. I love Weston. That'll be
a good warm-up for you.
I would love to play it. I've played it a couple times, and I would love to be back. And if they're welcoming me in, like, what's the timeline
on that? As soon as they get visitors, and you know, I'll tell you one thing that I've really actually – you watch management operate in all different realms, and – when we opened, you know, you had strict protocol. I would say about every third day they've adjusted that protocol. And so they've reacted to the way the golfers have reacted. Absolutely. You know, tee times are closer together now. It started off at 12 minutes, down to 9 minutes. It started at 8:30 tee times. Then it went down to 7:30. Now it's down to 6:30 on weekends. So they've really adjusted quickly to what we've been doing. And I think, you know, it's been handled really well on both sides. It's been handled really well by the golfers, and then in turn the club has handled it well. But as soon as visitors are welcome, Brian, and I, you know what, expect they'll continue to adjust. You've got an open invite over
thank
there
you,
now. Pooley. How about that?
Wow. You keep me posted.
Right
buddy,
to that
I'll
first tee.
I'll be there. I'll be there. Launching ball. I got to hit my wedge off every tee to make sure I'm prepared for that play. If I need to hit wedges off, you know, long carries at the National. So,
you know, I do think that the medalist should have been an example to you that you don't have the option to hit wedges from back there where they were hitting.
You're right.
And there are very similar holes. It's not like there's a track that says you can hit a wedge right up to the next tee box. The next tee box is separated by 150 yards of nothing.
I know. Like water.
That was
fescue.
Very similar. Did you're you right. not watch some of the tee shots that those guys were hitting and go, oh, boo.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Well, especially, like, the pros make it look so easy.
Well, that's
right.
Like,
they carry 250, like, it's nothing. They're hitting a 3-iron that far.
But if you notice where their ball is landing, their ball is just clearing. Yeah. And they're carrying it 250.
No, I know. Yeah. I am.
It doesn't bode well for you.
I am concerned about that element of the game, and I appreciate Weston offering up that invitation. I will accept. You just let me know when that's available, because it does seem like all the clubs in the GTA are doing that. You know, it's members only, which is totally understandable, but I don't think that's the case for spots outside of the GTA.
Well, I will say the tee sheet is so full of members right now.
Couldn't get on anyway.
Well, we were laughing about it because I played with Bobby Weeks on Wednesday. And he was saying, "Well, you look at the T-sheet, it's totally full every single day." Wait a second, you're Bob Weeks.
No kidding. How does Bob not get a hookup?
Hey, he's a member.
Bob shows up and he plays. Like I have played public courses with Bob, and he is the king of it. When Bob walks into your pro shop or up towards the first tee or the putting green, there is like a legitimate like hush comes over the crowd. And like there's Bob Weeks, most powerful man in golf.
And he was terrific too. He played really well.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. Well, and I played with him and Zucchino, the two of them. Like Mark Zucchino's right there as well. Mark is as synonymous with golf in this country as, anyone is. You know, he and Bob are, that's Golf Talk Canada, man. They roll into your course. It's like, okay, the big boys are here, and they're probably, hopefully they're going to talk about us, when the show gets rolling. But anyway, I feel like our next guest, I don't know if he's back on FaceTime. He's probably just getting off the 18th hole. I think he said
when he rolls into a golf course in D.C., let me tell you.
Oh, man, you can't wait.
Let me tell you.
Yeah, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. What's your story today, Ray?
Uh-oh, it didn't go well at the course. Eh?
There it is.
That's Friday going.
Yeah, that's John Vandeveldt on 18 and one sound.
Yeah. I'm thinking of Noodle's example the other day about the Ultimate Warrior coming into the ring. That's how I approached the course, and I whimpered out with another 80 today. It's like I shoot the same score every day. I get there differently, but it's always the same score.
Yeah. That's
it
golf,
is a complete
man.
Waste of 4 hours. Like, it'd be nice to write a different number on the card or something or other, and I'm like, oh, there it is again. Same score.
But 80's pretty good, is it not?
Like, that's very good.
That's
very
a really good score.
The problem is how you get there. Like, 80, I'm fine with 80, right? Like, but I bogeyed 6 holes in a row, and I'm like, I don't even know what the hell I'm doing out there. I'm like, you whack it around, and then you make a putt, and you go, oh, bogey, not bad. And then the next hole, I hit one in the water and make a double bogey. But then I made a birdie, so, hey, that's not bad. Then I make another bogey. And I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Okay, so, Ray, what's your best score if you took your best score on each hole this year at your own course? Are you 3-under, 4-under?
I would be under par for sure.
Yeah, and so am I. Yeah. But not all on the same day.
That's all that matters.
It's crazy,
I saw the pro walking out. He's like, how to go? I said, this course for 14 holes is awesome. I said, the problem is I can't figure out which 4 holes I hate the most.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
That's it. That's exactly what I go through, buddy. You and I, the same thing. Play great, and you 3 or 4 blow-up holes, and you're like, there goes my card. And is there a more ridiculous feeling in golf than hitting, like, a crazy tough putt to save bogey? And it's like, why did I waste that? Why did I waste that on a bogey? Like, save that for the birdie putt that I'm supposed to hit on the next hole. But it happens.
Okay, so I think I'm old enough now that I shouldn't get demoralized by my play. I am what I am. But I'm like, it's just so, I'm so disgusted with myself sometimes.
And you keep going back, don't you? You just keep going back.
Yeah.
Hooley, I smashed a drive on 18. I hit a 3-wood to the front of the green, rolled up my chip, and made birdie. I'm back on Tuesday.
That's all.
And just for your 80, you would have had an 81.
Yeah. Put yourself down for an 80 on Tuesday. It'd save yourself the trouble. But
exactly. If I had something else to do, I would.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it doesn't sound like we're going to have anything else to do for a while. And it sounds like the NHL and the NBA are basically going to start within like 24 hours of each other, which would suggest to me that it's not really their call. It's like a health official has told them, this is how we've mapped it out. This is the earliest you can go. But I can't imagine that's ideal for the NHL. Like, wouldn't you kind of wish you could get in a little bit before the NBA just to create a bit of buzz? Especially in the States. I mean, we know there's a pecking order, and the NBA is just ahead of the NHL. It's a reality down in the States.
Yeah, I'm sure they would love to. I got a sense, when we talked to Gary Bettman yesterday, that like they've made all these plans and they built this framework for how this thing is going to go, and really they're just hoping. You know, like they had to build the whole framework, build the foundation, then we can do this, and then we can select the hub cities, and then we can, confirm and acquire all the testing we're going to need, and then things have to go right. So I think, Brian, you really hit the nail on the head when, as much as they're building their plan, they're going to take their lead from the health authorities. Right. And really, both leagues are so similar in the portion of the season that has been completed, what they need to do. I mean, the real mess is trying to figure out baseball.
Oh,
it's money. You know, like that's a disaster on top of a disaster there. Like they're now the players are like, wait a minute, we already agreed to a pay cut. We're not taking more. And really, they shouldn't. Hockey, we're already paid through. Basketball, we're already paid through for the most part. It's about how can we cram in these 2 months, yet still give the players enough break so that next year can be completed in full, even if we have to go late. Like, that's really what the framework of this whole thing is all attempting to do.
You know, it's amazing how baseball has basically become a labor situation and not a pandemic situation.
Yeah,
it really has.
Yeah, like, it's not about safety. It doesn't seem
that
way. No,
the conversations remind me of what we went through, you know, in the early 90s and in the mid-90s with the labor situations where, you know, the contentions are just about how the pay is going to be structured and who's giving up what. And this has essentially become a labor situation. Whereas I think the one thing that came out of this, and that very first day on March 12th, when we were on the panel all day and the league was canceled, you know, and they're asking you questions like, what if this continues? What could you hope for? And one of the things I said I hoped for was that the NHL and the NHLPA would find new grounds, would find an area of agreement that they'd never been to before. And I really think in many ways that's happened. I think the conversation has been as good between the Players Association and the players as it's ever been. But that couldn't be further from the truth in baseball from everything we're hearing.
No, it's a mess.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's public is what really is causing, I think, a lot of issues for the brand, you know, baseball.
I wanted to ask you guys, too, like, where are you at with, like, Bauer calling out the agent, Boris, like, and all of that? Like, you know, I get it. Like, as a player, like, I'm close with my agent. I'm close with other agents, or at least respect them and stuff. But I, you know, there is a line, and I don't know if Trevor Bauer, he's a mouthpiece, and obviously, but like, it seems like this agent's got his fingers on everything. Or
he's so powerful. It's a good,
I'm not
it's a
sure
good
there's
question.
An agent in any sport that is like
more
he
powerful.
Is in baseball.
No, there isn't. I don't think there's anyone even remotely close. And I kind of get the impression, like, if you're one of his clients, he's the greatest thing in the world.
Right.
If you're not, he's a pain in the ass because he knows how powerful he is, and he's willing to talk, and he's got a name that people are aware of, right? Like he does media tours at the winter meetings every year. There's a Scott Boras Day. Scott's coming out to talk, and you know what's coming. He's going to launch grenades at five or six teams that aren't going to spend, and he's going to yell and scream. But I do think he supports the players.
He does, but he supports the high-end players.
His players.
Scott Boras does not represent backup third basemen.
Right.
That does not happen. So they're the ones that often get left behind in all of this stuff. And so, like, yet it's turned – what's interesting is in baseball now, you know, as you mentioned, Jamie, you got Bauer and, you know, talking about Boras and – other players are pitted against other players, yet there's some groups that are like, why should Mike Trout play for 30% of his salary?
Right.
And yet what they've kind of lost their way a little bit is, you can't let it become, as hard as it is, player versus player. The owners are on one side of the negotiation. You have to keep them there if you're going to negotiate. I'll give you a great example. The teams are furloughing employees all over the place. The Dodgers and the Angels, with all of their might financially, have started to furlough minor league players and employees. David Price is a pitcher, and he's going to pay everyone in the minor league system $1,000 a month for June.
That's crazy.
Like, why is David Price doing that?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Like, why? What's wrong with the team? Like, David Price has got more money than he'll ever need.
But not billions like the owners.
Correct. Yet, in this stuff, and Pooley, we saw it in our day when we were going through the lockouts, it pretty easily gets to player versus player. Big guys versus little guys. Middle guys versus little. You know, like, everybody's fighting for their own piece of the pie.
Right.
And it's,
that's natural.
And you quickly lose what the focus is. Fortunately for us in hockey, we're plodding away at the pandemic stuff and whether the game can continue. But I will say for the first time, I think it is a real benefit that the head of the Players Association and the head of the NHL are as experienced as they are and have been through this mud about 53 times. They know,
and even in two sports, even helpful that it's been in two different sports for the most part.
Correct. And what I'm sensing is they're pretty assured that they got to come up with a better, like with a new system in the CBA umbrella that's probably pushed forward by this situation we're all living in right now.
Right.
And that's a good thing in my mind anyway.
We were talking about just the broadcasting of the future if there's no fans in the stands. And we've had this conversation sporadically over the last month or so. But John Madden came out recently and kind of urging the producers of Sunday Night Football on NBC to not implement artificial fan noise or fake noise, fake crowd noise. And he just said, listen, you're going to hear sounds from the field that you've never heard before, and it's going to be amazing. And believe me, I know. I stood there as a coach for a long time. And it got us thinking and us kind of roundtabling. I think you can have the best of both worlds. I personally am a proponent of some sort of fake crowd noise for the television broadcast as a viewer from home, more so because I think it takes away the hollow nature of the broadcasters themselves. Like the play-by-play guy and the color guy doesn't sound right without something in the background kind of muffling it to an extent, if that makes sense. But you're still going to have the live raw feed from the ice, from the field, from the court, that you should be able to utilize. Like, we had the mic'd up player conversation earlier this week or last week. This is a little bit different. I'm not talking about mic'd up players, but just the mic, the natural sound of the ice, the court of the field, that I do think you can circle back to in and out of commercial, before the games, after the games, whatever. And it got us kind of roundtabling what else could be implemented here. Like, maybe this is going to open up the door to more three-man booths or a fourth-man booth. You know, you have a couple of different guys in the stands that can chime in a little bit as opposed to only the play-by-play guy and the color guy. Gambling components. Where's your head at, Ray, with potential, you know, creativity being applied to TV sports broadcasting in the next 12 months or so?
Well, I think it's an opportune time to try a bunch of stuff. But when you say about three-man and four-man booths, I'm all for more broadcasters having more jobs, right? That's great. However, I've worked in a three-man game. There's no time. Like, the game is going so fast, unless you want to take your play-by-play guy and essentially just turn it into three guys talking about the game as it's going on. Because if the play-by-play guy is rolling along, like if Gord and Chris are rolling along, and you have two analysts, me and Noodles are sitting in different places, and I see something and I go to start, but at the same time Jamie's got something else going, then you end up jumping on top of each other. And then it's easy to say, hey, if a bad goal goes in, I'm smart enough to know that that's Jamie's world. He's got to talk about it. And if somebody makes an offensive play, he would know that, hey, I got to jump on that first. But there's going to – the complication, don't you think, Jamie, Pooley, like you guys do games, like the complication of a third guy or a fourth guy, I don't think that works. The stuff with the gambling, though, man, why can't – you know where the bug is, where the score is up top? Why can't that just be, you know, you're on the power play, the odds of scoring go straight across the bug?
Right. It's quiet. Not. You don't even have to acknowledge it. It's just there. Right. It's just like something you see.
What will be cool, I think, is hearing, like, you know, the puck, you know, clicking off sticks, or you'll hear once in a while like a collision in it. And man, we know we stand there. Sometimes it sounds like a car crash.
Right.
It's the best part of standing between the benches is to hear the game. I'm not talking about the chirping, but to hear the game. But I still think they can pipe in that ambient background stuff like they did in the Bundesliga where they had that sound engineer with the ups and downs of the play. I thought it added a lot. Otherwise,
yeah,
it's a big hollow game, and that's not going to sound right.
Yeah, I was thinking, Ray, about a crazy idea, with more people involved. Now, this might be building a feature for an intermission. It might be once each period. But if you had an offensive, defensive guy, say, in each corner, so you and I were in two opposite corners in one end, and you handle the offensive side of things and I handle the defensive side of things from a player's perspective standpoint. You know, if you're going to get creative, you know, who knows? Once again, it's more people, it's more voices, but you'd be almost building a feature and say, okay, we're going to come to you once during the period or twice during the period, you know, without play-by-play, before a power play, before a penalty kill, watch for this, exactly. Stuff like that the producers could work in.
Now, why couldn't – so, Pooley, off of your idea, what if you have – like, everybody's got a picture-in-picture television.
Yep.
What about if the game, you know, the main screen is the game with no commentary coming out of a commercial, and you're breaking down something really cool that happened from a defensive perspective, or me from an offensive perspective, or Noodles has put together a goalie piece, and that's on the smaller screen.
And well, you know that when in golf they go to a commercial, but they playing through, right?
Playing
so they're
through,
in a commercial on one side and playing through on the other side.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, you would be talking, or we would be talking
right.
about our piece. The game is still going on. People are seeing the game.
Right.
Like, that could be something that technically I think is pretty easy to do and wouldn't cost a lot on the production side, but maybe you can add something of value in that. Like,
well,
that might look pretty cool.
You might know some of these producers are pretty creative. I think they'd love
they
to
are.
Get their hands on.
And to your point,
like
Ray, I'm a proponent. My favorite kind of booth is a two-man booth. You got the play-by-play guy, the color guy. The game's moving so fast. To your point, I mean, there isn't generally enough time. But I mentioned the example of what Fox used to do with Tony Siragusa, where Tony would just be down like behind an end zone. He wouldn't even hear from him for like 10 minutes. And then all of a sudden he'd chime in like, hey, I'm watching. I'm down here on the goal line. That looks like they're in, guys. You know, that looks like a fumble to me. It's just maybe you could have, you know, a guy, because there's no one in the stands. They're sitting right behind the net, you know, like, and it's know your role, know your space. Don't jump in. Like, but when you get called upon, if something's going on down there, what do you see? You know,
wandering around.
Yeah, it's just, and I don't know if that even makes logistical sense. Maybe it would sound stupid, feel stupid, look stupid, but now's the time. Like, this just feels like 2 months of a whiteboard and fill it up.
Okay, but
ideas.
Brian, I just thought of something. What about, and we cannot forget this as we're coming up with ideas and things that should be or could be and all that. There still is the umbrella of how many people are allowed in the arena.
Well, I don't know.
No, but I mean, as you were talking about that, I thought, I wonder if you'd run into that, too.
You might.
Yeah.
You absolutely might. Yeah.
I can't plan to cut my lawn and eat dinner on the same day. These guys are trying to plan all of this stuff, and it's all got to fit within somebody else's regulations.
They don't know.
Right.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, I agree. Like you mentioned, like 12 different camera angles. I don't know if they'll allow 12 cameramen in there. You might have to have remote cameras and you know, you could be creative with stuff like that. I think we have seen like cameras zip along the top of the glass, and you know, the NFL has that what is that? Like almost like a zip line that goes above the field and stuff. You're going to have to be creative in that scenario.
Jamie, that's a really good idea because you know, remember in Toronto, they had that sky cam or whatever the hell you want to call it. And they had to get rid of it because the camera's in the way of the people sitting in the upper deck.
Right.
Right.
You know, you're asking somebody to pay all that money. And oh, by the way, you might miss a goal because the camera's going past your face. Well, there's nobody there.
Right.
Now, there's a cost element to that, too, to string it up and to robotically manipulate that camera to go up and down the ice. But now would be the time you'd be able to do it. What if they're flying a couple of drones around in there?
Give it a shot. Why not? That'd be great. Like, just one falls out of the sky in game seven. Be amazing.
Oh, somebody clears it out. They hit a drone, and it falls in a million pieces onto the ice.
Right. Well,
never mind.
World Junior fiasco.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just the camera at the World Junior. We already
it hit the drone. No, it didn't. That goal counts. Sorry, pal. Well, there's going to be a lot more of this discussion as we move forward. Have a great weekend, buddy. We'll do it again Monday at 5.
Yeah, everybody be well. Look after each other and yourselves, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
You got it. There's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom is open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Visit Maple Toyota right next to Wonderland or buy online at MapleToyota.com. Dwayne Casey, the head coach of the Pistons, longtime coach here in Toronto, one of our favorites, back on the show. He will join us next. All right, Bruce Feldman will join us in about a half an hour. Looking forward to that. He's been covering college football and college sports for a long time. It's be right in your wheelhouse, Pooley, because there's a lot of concern, right? Like the football programs are going to survive. The basketball programs will survive. But the other sports, especially not the major colleges, like the mid-majors and D3 and stuff like that, there's real concern about whether or not they're going to be able to survive.
At many of the schools, Brian, football funds the entire athletic program.
Right.
Like, we had 26 sports at Notre Dame, and now we were structured differently, and the football income actually went back to the university. It didn't go to the athletic department. If it just went to the athletic department, we would have been just fine. And then we had to budget back out. But from a practical standpoint, the football program at a major college can fund the entire athletics program.
Right.
And without that money there, every other sport is in jeopardy.
Big time. Yeah, so we'll get into that conversation. And Trevor Lawrence, if and when we have a college football season, is he going to get the John Elway, Andrew Luck treatment, basically pillar to post, lock number one, superstar quarterback, a guy who's going to step into the NFL and just immediately change everything for whichever franchise ends up drafting him. So we'll catch up with Bruce in about a half an hour. But we haven't caught up with our buddy Dwayne Casey in a while. It's been a while since we caught up with DC, and we used to have him on all the time when he was here in Toronto, one of our favorites, and now he's in Detroit doing work with the Pistons and doing great work in the community. I read about this yesterday, and he and I were going back and forth last night. Always great to have him back on the show. Here he is, the head coach of the Pistons, Dwayne Casey. Dwayne, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Brian. How you doing, bud?
Doing very well. Very, very well. You sent me an email last night, and we were kind of going back and forth, and I read about it yesterday, what you've been kind of doing for the community of Detroit, which is a city that obviously has been on hard times for a while, to say nothing of what it's gone through ever since this pandemic stormed through. Take us through, what's going on in Detroit. How is Detroit holding up, and how are you trying to help out?
Well, one, the main thing, when the pandemic first hit, Brian, I reached out to Dave Bing, who is a former mayor of Detroit, who is also a good friend and former NBA great, and to see what I could do, what we could do as an organization and our players, myself, and one thing Dave was doing, he's worked with Focus Hope, which is a foundation that feeds elderly people, seniors, young families with young kids. Probably about they service almost over 40,000, people over the last year. And so he said that let's do something for them. So he and I both first physically took, bags of groceries to different homes of people who were seeking it and delivered it to their homes. And, that's right in the middle of it. So we had our masks and gloves and proudly went to different homes. And it really touched me. And I know it touched Mayor Bing, because we went to a couple of homes, and the lady that was with us said, do you know who these two guys are? And to us, we were just someone that was bringing them groceries. And the beautiful thing about it was that, after we told them who we were, they were excited. But the beautiful thing is that they just was looking for a handout, someone to help them eat. And so that was something that was that's how I first got introduced to Focus Hope. And then after that, I wanted to do something financially. My wife and I, we, you know, did something significant as far as helping them and buy more groceries and that type of thing for the people in Detroit. Because as you said, Brian, it's a tough city that's seen tough times, but, you know, they've never given up. And that's one, you know, personality trait of the city of Detroit, that it's a tough city. And people that were tough and came through tough times, and hopefully they can get through this and come back and bounce through this, especially through this pandemic situation.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to watch the sports world kind of rally around their respective communities, and a lot of members of the sporting community giving back, whether it's with their time, with their money, just with their connections, and with who they are kind of as a brand, so to speak.
Right.
How do you think this might change? Let's stick to the NBA landscape, the way the NBA operates in the future in terms of charity, in terms of reaching out. You know, could that be a silver lining? We didn't ever want to go through this, but once we get through it, maybe we're in a better spot as a community because of it, in a way.
Well, that is a great point. And that's one of the major points why I wanted to try to reach out to my, you know, friends in the media, the guys that covered the NBA over the years that I respect, to try to get the word out, you know, or to reach, whether it's NHL players, baseball players, basketball players. Because we're fortunate, we've had the opportunity to rise above a lot of things and be, you know, be blessed and you know, financially, to be able to help those who are unemployed, who didn't have the opportunity. As some people are already hitting hard times in Detroit, I've employed our players, baseball players, football players here in Detroit to help out. You know, whether it's Focus Hope or other organizations, it doesn't necessarily have to be them. But do something to help. And I think, like you said, the pandemic will help open people's eyes. It's not just about sports or how much you have. It's about, what can I do to help others? What can I do to express love and to help, to reach out and help? And hopefully my kids can see that as an example. And if we ever, hopefully we don't ever go through something like this again, they'll be first in line to help whoever. And I'm sure there's people there in Toronto that need the help and could be helped. So I hope that, whether it's the Raptors or the Maple Leafs or the, you know, Blue Jays, some the players, staff, or whoever can do something to help, don't be afraid to reach out, because, you know, those foundations, those people who are trying to get the resources and to be able to help, are looking for helping hands and just waiting for those calls, and they'll be excited to hear from you.
With Dwayne Casey, the head coach of the Detroit Pistons, in terms of your interactions with your players and, you know, either discussing or maybe, I guess, you know, advocating for them to use their voices and use their platforms with just a bevy of topics, I've always been curious how you've handled that. I mean, we're going through this pandemic and COVID-19. I'm sure you're aware of what's happening in Minneapolis and with the death of George Floyd, and how a lot of different athletes are speaking out, both white and black, you know, and people of different backgrounds on police brutality and race relations. How have you handled that over the years? You know, I guess either urging your players to speak out or what kind of conversations do you have with your guys when it comes to pretty heavy topics?
Well, I that's exactly right, and those are heavy topics. And the first thing I did, and fortunately I have coached in Minnesota, so I still have a lot of friends there, whether it's in the media, also talked to some people in the front office there in Minnesota, and just express my, you know, voice to them, to what they're going through, which is a tough time, and for a different reason, but similar. Because a lot of that frustration, Brian, and that plight that they're going through is probably economic driven. You know, people who are down on their luck, wants to be heard, don't have the opportunity to be out front. So I would say some of that frustration that we're seeing in Minneapolis is coming from hard times also. And again, whatever players can do, what I tell players, whatever you can do to help, remember where you came from. At one point, you were on the other side of that door when they were knocking on that door to deliver food or have to go get the county cheese, as we call it in Kentucky. So, you know, at one point, but the good Lord blessed you to be talented, you had the opportunity, and now you're here. So let's pay it forward, reach back. And I say that all the time, a lot of times, because, you know, from being at my age, Brian, that we're giving players not only my kids' lesson, but a lot of young players in our league who've never been in a situation where they have to give back or pay it forward. And I'm a firm believer in you reap what you sow. And I do believe players, when they give and be humble and be appreciative of what they have, give back, reach out, good things come back in spades. So I talk about that all the time in some of our film sessions. And, you know, I texted a couple of players to help deliver food here in Detroit, the guys that are here in the market. So trying to get everybody involved, because I have no shame in trying to get guys to help, especially the unfortunate.
We're chatting with Dwayne Casey, the head coach of the Detroit Pistons, longtime coach here in Toronto. So as for basketball, I mean, it kind of sounds like it's going to happen late July, early August. You guys are in a position where we don't know if you're going to be included, if you're going to play again.
Right.
How much focus are you even placing on basketball right now with everything else that's going on?
Well, it's still important, Brian. And again, I totally understand, you know, in our situation where we're in a rebuilding situation, you know, we got a lot of young players. I would like to play and have a chance to get back in the gym with our young team just to get some repetitions and build some other good habits if we had to play a few games. The unfortunate part is you have a player like Derrick Rose or Blake Griffin or older player who it wouldn't serve a lot of purpose for them to ramp it up for 4 weeks and then go play four games with their body and some of their health issues. But for the young players, it'd be very good. But as you said, I think they're going to go, you know, I don't know this for sure, but with the playoff scenario, with teams like Toronto, Boston, and Milwaukee in the top, you know, eight playoff teams and go, and which one I think is probably safer, the less number that you have with the pandemic, and go ahead and play in the playoffs, which is, you know, it's fine with me. You know, like Adam told us, you know, there's going to be some people unhappy. But again, I understand it, would love to play, but I understand what they're doing, and we'll, you know, be supportive of whatever the league comes up with. And I think a lot of players just want to get back to play. And myself, I want to get back coaching again. So I think with our team, hopefully they'll give us an opportunity to continue to work, because we are where we were the first couple of years in Toronto. You know, kind of rebuilding, getting an identity, you know, retooling our roster piece by piece, year by year, you know, and until we have a chance to hit that home run and get it the way we want to get it.
Coach Casey, with the NHL having determined that there's going to be a play-in and a playoff, so 24 teams involved, I've thought a lot about the coaching part of it. And if you're going to go back and coach in that environment, do you think you're coaching more, the same amount, or are you coaching less going back? They haven't played in 2 months.
That's a great point. One thing I think is when you go back, I think we have to be very cognizant of the fact guys have been off for probably 3 months, and they haven't played competitively with their bodies, you know, reacting with their bodies and changing speed, going against power in the last 3 months. And so if we come right in and ramp it up to 100 miles an hour right off the bat, I promise you, you're going to have some major injuries no matter what sport it is, whether it's hockey, baseball. Baseball probably not as much because, it's kind of a slower building sport. But I know with hockey and basketball, we plan on getting back in, whether we go into the playoffs down to Orlando or not, to go slow. So I would say to your question is it'd be a lot of fundamental coaching, slower coaching going in, probably more based on conditioning, getting the body ready to go through the grind, more so than getting out and competing. Even the teams that are going to play the playoff settings, I think it behooves everybody to be careful just because guys haven't played competitive basketball, not only one-on-one, not only five-on-five, not even one-on-one. So it's going to be a process. I think everybody has to, you know, say, let's take it slow. just for the sake of the players and their bodies and not to, to help prevent injuries.
With Dwayne Casey, we'd be remiss not to ask you about, you know, Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, which is now a couple weeks in our rear view, but you were in Seattle when, you know, you guys had some pretty good battles. Did you ever get caught in the crosshairs of him chirping you or smack talk or what?
No. I tried to stay out of that, and I'm surprised George set himself up by walking by him and not saying hello, knowing how close he and George were. So that was the talk by George. Just don't give him any locker room fodder. Just don't give him any bulletin board material. Make sure we, you know, go about our business, get things done, but don't say anything to the media to get them, because they were looking for things to get them motivated, whether it's talking trash, and that's what got Michael going. Is, and that's what we was trying to keep tell, we kept telling Gary Payton, hey, let's keep it cool, Gary. Keep it, you know, be quiet, go slow. But that's not Gary's personality. You know, Gary wakes up in the morning talking trash. So, you know, so he, but again, we, it was something we didn't do the first few games, was put Gary onto Michael, because Gary was the only point guard. At that time, Nate McMillan was hurt. He had a bad sciatic nerve in his back. So we knew we were down on point guards. I think Eric Snow was our backup rookie point guard. So we had to, we couldn't get Gary in foul trouble. We couldn't wear him down. So I think we put, I can't remember who we put him on. It may have been Harper, but we didn't start him out on Michael. We made a mistake by putting Hersey Hawkins on him, and he lit Hersey up, and he lit Detlef up, and but Gary came in and did a good job. And the other story that was missed on that, he played, the myth was, the story was in Seattle in game three, because it was a 2-3-2 scenario playoff platform. In game three, he came in and played. He played 36 holes of golf, came in that night, and still kicked our butt. So, you know, he, that's how good Michael was at that time. And he reminds me so much of Michael. I mean, so much of LeBron, Michael does. You know, he's smart. You show him a defense one way, he's going to pick it apart. So that those two are a lot alike with their basketball intellect and sort of the same thing we went through in Toronto, just getting over mountains. LeBron, everybody at that time was trying to get over Mount Michael.
Right.
And, you know, that was a whole history of that. They went through similar paths as far as teams having to get over them. And, but, again, they were so smart, so athletic, and so gifted. They could carry a big load on their back no matter who you put around them.
Well, it's always great catching up with you, Dwayne. Stay safe and continued success down there. And we'll do this again down the road. Always appreciate you finding time for us.
That'd be great, Brian. Good talking to you. Be safe and give my best to everyone.
You got it. There he is, Dwayne Casey.
All right. Thank you.
There he is, the head coach of the Detroit Pistons. One of our favorites here on
the
Overdrive.
The voice of reason, the voice of everything. I just stood back. I just sat back. It was almost like, I don't know if you could recognize this, Pooley. He was shocked that there was another
voice on.
He's like, who the hell is that asking me a question?
Somebody's cutting Hayes' grass. Who is cutting Hayes' grass?
Right.
But he liked it because you were like, Coach Casey, I've got a question for you. He was like, is there another person on the line here?
I like it. And it was a good question, too. He's like, that's great. And it's a good point, Pooley, about when you do return, do you coach more, the same, less? How do you handle it?
Well, the temptation is going to be there. The temptation is going to be there for some personalities to coach more. Like, they're going to think that they are the sole difference, and the best guys are going to figure out, you know, that this is a new environment, and they're going to handle it differently.
Right. All right, let's come back and get more into that. That's a really good point. Good point. Good point, Dave. That's a good point,
Thank
Dave.
You. That's a great,
What's that
great
voice?
Point.
What's that voice?
That's some random guy. Don't worry about him, Dwayne. All right, so thanks again to Dwayne Casey. Bruce Feldman coming up on College Sports, and Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Bruce Feldman coming up on College Sports in about 10 minutes. Dave Poulin with one of the all-time great questions to Dwayne Casey. It's a shock that you got your voice heard to begin with, Pooley, but you bring
he
up
He probably
an
thought
point.
There was just some guy walking through your basement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, someone from the Jiffy app just showed up with a quick question.
Walking through your basement there, Brian?
Yeah. Well, listen, if they're looking for the 19th putting green, it's over here. It's down here in the basement. I'm rolling putts, man, in between breaks.
Do you think it's going to help? Do you think it's really going to help?
No, not at all. Because the felt, you know, it's nothing like a green.
You could just do it on the carpet with a cup. You know that,
yeah.
Right?
Like, I'm still pushing putts. Yeah. Oh, of course I could. Yeah, you just put the old school way. You put a coffee mug down and just
Absolutely.
Put into that. Yeah,
Absolutely.
That would have saved me a few bucks. But what are you going to do?
I remember years ago, we got to go, but I had a brand new set of Wilson clubs given to me, and they sat in my garage for about 6 years. And finally, I was like, I think I went to a buddy. I was like, get them out of here. I don't need them. So anyways, I should get a set of golf clubs.
Find them. Yeah, get exactly.
No, they're gone. I gave them away, but I'll find
a pair of golf clubs. You know what? Really want to throw a golf rough, say, I got to get a pair of golf clubs.
Yeah, get a pair.
Yeah, exactly.
You got gifted at a Calgary event, like a Flames event, one of those, a driver that I still use.
Oh, I gave it to you, right?
You gave it to me, yeah, about four or 5 years ago. It's a great driver. I still use it. It's a Nike driver. You can't find Nike apparel anymore.
Right.
They don't even make it.
There you go.
All right, final hour coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.